Chapter 16. The next morning, at 6 a.m., the meeting began promptly in the big tent. General Sherman presided over his group of about 20 military specialists in a wide array of disciplines. Nisha and Rachel sat in front to give the impression of buying into the process. General Sherman displayed a map of the rapidly growing colony on a large holographic screen. "Today we'll execute a reconnaissance mission. Our goal is to walk through the heart of the colony and scope things out. We'll go in unarmed to not appear threatening. The goal of this mission is to contact the..." He glanced at Nisha, recalling how she didn't want anyone to use the derogatory term, Chameleon. "The Omanji leadership. That will allow us to learn about their goals and establish a diplomatic connection with them. We'll leave from this location at 700 hours. You've already been briefed on protocol issues, so be ready to go." After 30 minutes, the meeting ended. Nisha and Rachel returned to their tent. Rachel looked out at the tents of the objectives experts group. "They'll be in for a surprise. The Omanji didn't like us walking through their colony. Remember?" "Yes," Nisha said as she put on her hiking boots. "My heart raced when we got close to the human children, so we got out of there. I'm not broadcasting audio or video of this mission." "Me neither," Rachel said, "but we should record it in case we get into trouble." They met at the designated location and climbed into several large trucks. They drove down the mountain to get as close to the edge of the colony as possible. After that, they hiked into the colony with General Sherman in the lead. "Okay, we need to spread out, but remain a group. Focus on your area of specialty, and if I give the signal to evacuate, we'll exit the colony as quickly as possible by retracing our steps." Nisha and Rachel stayed at the back of the group in case they needed to make a hasty retreat. The colony seemed much larger than a few days earlier when they last walked through it. The towers were massive, yet sinuous. Each tower base covered an area of about 3x3 city blocks, and the tops couldn't be seen. Every tower soared to about twice the height of the tallest human-made building, and 100 times more massive. They had built over 200 towers covering about 20 square miles in the flatlands along the base of the mountains. Many billions of builder drones made white noise in the form of hissing and clicking sounds as they prepared new building sites and constructed new towers. Nisha looked around and gave Rachel a curious glance. "So, over 200 of these towers are built, each of which can house a million of them. Shuttle spheres come and go every minute. Where is the traffic? Where are they? How do they get around? Do they work like we do?" "They're as mysterious now as they were in the single sphere orbiting the moon. Now here we are walking amongst them." Rachel glanced up to view the top of one of the towers. "Yeah, a ton of questions and no answers. Considering this is by far the most highly populated city on Earth, few are walking out here. Like you said, there's no traffic. The buildings are connected, so they must travel in those connections. Maybe they don't move and work remotely connected if they work, or drones do all the work." The group continued to walk towards the central core of the colony, with General Sherman leading the way. Light filtered down to them from many angles, producing prismatic and colorful effects. The Omanji polished the non-slip walking surface. Crawling builder drones worked on final changes, acting like 3D printers to form a multitude of curved and hard-edged features. The general stopped to admire a particularly tall and slender curve of the crushed and reformed granite-like stone. "My proximity detectors indicate increasing numbers of Omanji are converging on us from all directions." He looked around and noticed small numbers of Omanji walking towards them. Nisha and Rachel walked up to the general. Nisha glanced at a small group of them and said, "Lucas, this happened to us last time. They gradually surrounded us. They didn't harm us, but we felt intimidated. So we left. Don't let the security of our numbers fool you into thinking you're safer now than if you were alone. In this colony of 200 million, a million of us would feel isolated." The general nodded and continued to poke around. "Thanks, Nisha. I'll keep that in mind. I'd like to find the human children and talk to their leaders. The leaders must be somewhere. There's a central intelligence capable of producing this incredible environment." Gradually, more Omanji moved closer. "The human children are in that accessible area," one member of the group said. "Okay, let's go there," the general said. He walked 100 meters at a brisk pace to view the children. He stopped to observe them from a close distance. "They aren't speaking," the general said. "They seem to be interacting like normal kids of their age, but they're silent." "They're communicating via a telepathic brain implant," Nisha said. "Their DNA has been modified, but they are walking around and interacting like normal adolescents. I'm encouraged by that. She surveyed the group of hundreds of children, but Priya couldn't be found. Rachel felt a chill on the back of her neck, and she looked behind her. General, we're being surrounded, she said. We better keep moving. It's okay, Rachel, he said. I want to meet them up close and personal. The president and some members of Congress are watching. They can approach us at their own pace in this way. I don't think we need to worry about that. They do everything at their own pace, Nisha said. Gradually, the Omanji walked towards them on the smooth surface. A crowd of them gathered around the general's group. The general glanced around. I've never had this feeling before. They watch us like a tiger stalks prey. They sniff us up and down and scan us with those eyes. Nisha walked over to the general. They understand what you're saying, so be careful about comparing them to animals, if you know what I mean. Their IQs are off the charts, so never underestimate them based on their looks or behavior. Acknowledged, the general said as he examined them. I'm going to attempt to communicate. He turned to one particularly intimidating Omanji and said, Hello, I'm General Sherman. The Omanji briefly looked back at him and continued to monitor the group of curious humans gathered before him, or her, or it. The general looked at Nisha and Rachel and whispered, They aren't friendly, are they? It's best not to say things like that, Rachel said. The general put his palm to his forehead. Right, I keep forgetting. The general and his objectives experts group continued to attempt to communicate. They used every piece of communication equipment which existed to no avail. The Omanji made no visible attempt to communicate back. They looked on and continued to move closer to the group. While the general attempted to communicate, Nisha and Rachel scrutinized the human children interacting in the accessible area. I don't see Priya or Sophie anywhere, Nisha said with sadness. She paused for a second as she watched the kids. It's tempting to go up to them and talk with them. I want to ask those questions. Why don't we talk with them? Rachel said. I have questions, too. If only we two were involved, I'd do something. However, I don't want to cause any problems right now. My attitude may change later, though, she said, with a sly smile. Rachel smiled back at Nisha and glanced at the objectives experts group. Yeah, they don't seem to have any objectives, and they aren't experts, she whispered and smiled. They are a group, however, though not a mutually sentient one. Nisha tried to contain her laughter, but a little got out and the group looked over at them. Shh, Rachel whispered. The group walked over to find out what caused all the fuss. Have you discovered something? The general said. Nisha had to think of something quickly. Well, I noticed how the children seem so normal besides the fact they don't speak. Yes, he said. They do seem normal. I'm going to try to talk with them. They stood 30 meters away from the children. He walked towards them slowly so as not to startle the children or the Omanji. Almost immediately, several Omanji walked on an intercept course and soon were standing between the general and the children. Their skin turned from a flat gray to a dull red. The general stopped and looked back towards the group. They're fast. I guess they don't want us to communicate with the children. You think so? Nisha whispered. Shh, Rachel reminded her. The general peered between two of the Omanji and shouted to the children. Hello, can you hear me? The Omanji closed ranks and turned a more vibrant and deeper shade of red. Okay, I get the hint, he said. Nisha noticed one of them held a smooth and silvery object in one of its hands. General, you better get back here right now. I'm serious. The general turned around and walked briskly back to the group. The Omanji grabbed at the group's communication equipment. Yes, I think we better leave. Did anyone get a reply on any frequency to our messages to them? We've detected no reply on any frequency, one group member said. Okay, let's go, the general said as he walked around a growing group of curious Omanji which had gathered nearby. They made their way through the deep canyons of the colony. The towers are so tall, it's like we're indoors, the general said casually as he tried to diffuse the rising tension in the group. Increasing numbers of Omanji appeared from the bases of several towers, in anticipation of the small group of humans walking by. The tower walls feel like they're closing in on us, the general said. The group shared his sentiments, except for Nisha and Rachel, who felt energized by the environment as well as anxious. They had grown used to the Omanji. As they neared the perimeter of the colony, Nisha read a message in her eyepiece. This is Bok. I see you. She forwarded the message to Rachel, who smiled and gave Nisha a knowing glance. Nobody else in the group understood. "Let's talk later," Nisha messaged back. "Okay," Bach said. After a half hour of walking, they exited the colony. "I'm glad to be out of there," the general said. "I've never felt this level of anxiety anywhere at any time. This includes war zones surrounded by the enemy. My heart is pounding." Several other group members echoed the general's sentiment. "We'll meet in the objectives experts' tent tomorrow morning at 600 hours to discuss today's events and what we can do tomorrow. I'll meet privately with the president in a few hours to discuss options. You're dismissed." Nisha and Rachel walked back to their tent. "Rachel, I'm relieved nothing happened. That was a close call." "Yeah, did you notice how angry they got at the general? For a few seconds there, I thought they were about to do something painful to him or stun him." "I know," Nisha said, smiling. "What was he thinking?" "The general doesn't realize the Omanji think of us as nothing more than another animal species native to Earth. Do you think we should tell him?" Rachel said. Nisha stopped smiling and looked down in silence for a few seconds. "I don't think we should tell anyone anything. People are bad at keeping secrets. Word would get out and the economy would collapse because of psychological depression. Who knows what would happen?" "You're right," Rachel said. "I keep thinking we should be transparent, but things have gone too far now. Telling anyone might set off a series of events which would lead to catastrophe. Anything we do or don't do has consequences. I wonder if we're doing the right thing, but there's no way to know in advance." Nisha seemed preoccupied. "What is it?" Rachel said. "I got a message from Bach wishing to talk with us. I'll turn on message forwarding to you. Do you want to talk? We're free now."
"Yeah, the sooner the better," Rachel said. Nisha entered her reply.
"We can talk now. Turn on your audio translator so we can talk more quickly. Messaging is slow." They waited for a minute. "I understand you two wish to ask me questions." Nisha and Rachel glanced at each other wide-eyed.
"How do you know Bach?" Nisha said.
"I listened to both of you talking while your group walked in the colony. Nisha, you said to Rachel you had many questions for me." Rachel replied that she also had questions. They glanced at each other again.
"They seem to be omniscient," Rachel said.
"Yeah," Nisha said. "I have a question."
"Proceed."
"How did you know we discussed having questions? I thought we were alone when we whispered those comments about having questions."
Bach paused for a few seconds.
"Everything that happens at the colony is recorded. Every noise, action, and most thoughts by anyone or anything can be accessed later. I set up an alert so I could follow all human activity within the compound. I listen to all your comments. Sensors are built into everything. They send data to the central locus."
"You're telling me all events everywhere are recorded?" Nisha said.
"Yes, within reasonable limits, random noise and vibrations are filtered out. Whenever a sentient adult being acts, all Omanji know, if they care to look. Not everyone cares, but the information is available if needed. In Omanji society, knowledge is the pinnacle of existence and the reason to exist."
"Don't you think your privacy is being invaded?" Nisha said.
Bach didn't speak for several seconds.
"Sorry for the delay," Bach said. "I had to consider the word privacy. I've never thought much about the human concept of privacy. Everything is transparent in Omanji culture among the elders. The young Omanji enjoy some privacy because not everything we do is recorded. This conversation I'm having with you isn't being recorded because it's not considered important. That's because young Omanji are not important, and neither are humans. The elders don't consider what I do to be important unless I break a law. As far as I know, I've never broken a law. The only reason your actions were recorded is because you were a human in an open space in the colony, and you might cause trouble. You might need to be stunned or eliminated. Privacy isn't an issue for the elders because they share each other's thoughts, and most things are transparent. There's a degree of what you call privacy, however. We can choose to not share thoughts. Sharing is optional." Nisha and Rachel glanced at each other and raised their eyebrows. "Are you upset that everyone in Omanji society will be monitoring you after you merge with the collective awareness?" Rachel said.
"No."
"Why would that upset me?" Bach said, turning a pale gray. He fell silent again. "Young Omanji are used to some autonomy, and they lose it when they merge. I'll give more thought to your question. I don't know how to answer. Please ask another question." Nisha muted the audio for a brief second.
She gave Rachel a surreptitious smile and whispered, "I think we planted a seed." She restored the audio.
"I detected an artificial silence in the audio stream. Were you attempting to become self-aware amongst yourselves?"
"Yes, Bach. That's what we strive for, even though humans are often not self-aware on any level."
"Okay, can you tell us about your home planet? Also, why did you come to Earth?"
This time he didn't hesitate to answer.
"We're moving to Earth because our home planet of Oma is becoming uninhabitable. Oma orbits closely around a stable red dwarf star. Oma receives about the same amount of energy from its star as Earth does because Oma is closer to our star and our star isn't as bright as yours. On Earth, we must wear lenses in our eyes to protect us from your sun's brightness at higher wavelengths. Oma is on the borderline where the difference in the star's gravitational pull between the close and far side of Oma will cause the planet's rotation to slow and eventually stop." Rachel interrupted.
"Oh, we call this tidal lock."
"Yes," Bach said.
"You're correct, Rachel. I'm happy you know some basic astrophysics." Nisha and Rachel glanced at each other and rolled their eyes.
"We do, Bach. Please continue," they both said at once.
"Oma's day period is currently 30 Earth days and slowing. The weather hit what you call a tipping point and is getting more violent. With each passing century, the rotation will slow. Eventually, one side of Oma will permanently face our star, just as one side of your moon faces the Earth. Unfortunately, both continents are mostly on the side of the planet, which will be always facing away from our star. Eternal darkness will cause most of the ecosystem on land to collapse. We tried to keep the planet rotating, but the task required too much energy. My star is part of a trinary star system. However, the other two stars are far away and give the planet little heat or light. They are each as bright as your moon at night."
"Before we continue, I need you to clarify something," Nisha said.
"Did you say you're moving to Earth?"
"Yes." Bach's answer reverberated in their minds and they fell silent for several seconds. Nisha and Rachel glanced at each other, unsure of what to say or ask. If they asked the question they had in mind, they were afraid of the answer. Bach couldn't tell what happened because he couldn't see their faces.
"Are we still connected?" he said.
"Sorry, Bach," Rachel said.
"We're digesting this latest information. Are you saying the entire population of your species is moving to Earth?"
"No," Bach said quickly. They felt relieved. "Some Omanji elected to stay behind and face the increasingly harsh conditions on Oma. A small patch of land in a favorable daylight location will support a small population after tidal lock."
"Bach, how many will stay behind?" Nisha said.
"About 100 million of us will remain on Oma."
Nisha seemed relieved that so many would stay behind. She hoped 100 million would be a good portion of them.
"What is the population of your species on Oma?" She held her breath, waiting for the answer.
"Approximately 81 billion of us used to live on Oma," Bach said. "I estimate that 80.9 billion of us are moving to Earth." Silence.
Nisha and Rachel were glad Bach couldn't see them because they were in a state of shock. Rachel spoke first.
So you're telling us that almost 81 billion Omanji will be leaving Oma to move to Earth?"
"That statement is partially true."
"What do you mean, Bach?" Nisha said.
"Those 80.9 billion of us already left Oma and are heading to Earth right now. Most are almost here."
Silence again.
"Nisha and Rachel, are we still connected?" Bach said again.
"We're still here," Nisha said, still not sure what to think about anything.
"We're listening. Are you making calculations, Rachel?"
"Yes, Bach, I'm calculating the final size of your colony. Right now, about 300 spheres are in orbit. Each hold about 1 million Omanji, right?"
"Yes, that's close to being correct."
"Approximately 250 towers are completed with about 100 more being built. Each of those towers also holds about 1 million Omanji, correct?"
"That's also close," Bach patiently said, letting the humans do their calculations. Rachel continued asking her questions.
"If each tower holds 1,080,000,000,000 Omanji are moving to Earth, 80,000 of these towers will be required to house all Omanji. There will be 80,000 spheres orbiting Earth. Now bear with me here. I want to get an idea of the scale of this endeavor. Each tower takes up a 3x3 city block area. The density is about 10 towers per square mile in the colony, with some space in between them. Eventually, the colony will cover a little over 8,000 square miles of land. That's a 90 by 90 mile area at the current population density of this colony. Am I close, Bok?
Yes, Bok said. The final population density will be higher than in this initial phase. Larger towers will be built.
The towers here are smaller and more conservative while we monitor the stability of the building site. I estimate a 70 by 70 mile area will be the final surface area of our colony. Once again, Nisha and Rachel glanced at each other in disbelief. Nisha paused again. How are they going to fit 80 billion Omanji into an area not much bigger than the size of the greater Los Angeles-San Diego area?
I can answer that, Bok said.
On Oma, we lived in dense colonies. Here we generate our own power, and the colony is a self-contained arcology, as you call it. I managed to access the master plan for the colony. The elders don't know I did this. Juveniles like me have limited access to everything on Oma, but they ignore us. According to the plans, the colony will be constructed entirely in this Mojave Desert. Few humans will be displaced. We'll get our water from the ocean, and our ecological impact on Earth will scarcely be noticed by humans.
Bok, how can you feed 80 billion Omanji without stripping the Earth of its resources?
Nisha said. We've noticed you grow your own food using native plants. Some of those plants feed animals you also consume. These inefficient practices were abandoned millennia ago on Oma as our population grew. The food humans eat here on Earth comes from solar energy that plants convert into sugars and other nutrients. The plants also contain other chemicals and minerals humans consume. We manufacture our own food from energy obtained from nuclear fusion and other energy sources I should not discuss with you until you discover them yourself. I notice humans are attempting to create energy from nuclear fission, and your technique is not efficient. Soon, you'll figure out how to generate energy more efficiently with nuclear fusion. It's taking you a long time to learn how to do it. There's a trick to it you're overlooking, but I can't say more than that. Instead of using the sun as the energy source to create food, you use fusion and other technologies? Nisha said.
Yes. Solar energy doesn't provide enough energy to supply 80 billion of us in a small area. Our bodies are like what we observe in the bodies of the Earth's animals. In our colony, we convert nuclear fusion energy and the atomic elements directly into sugar-like organic molecules. After that, we do some processing to create substances we enjoy eating. There's a major difference between human food production and Omanji food production. Humans consume the results of passively collected solar energy in plants, and the Omanji consume fusion energy that's actively created. Drones create our food on every level of the towers in the colony. We don't need sunlight to do it. Does this make sense?
I understand, Nisha said. Now I want to ask you another question. Where is Oma?
Can I control your eyepiece for a minute? Bok said.
I'll show you my home planet. I'm not sure if you'll understand.
Nisha felt nervous about the fact that Bok seemed to be able to control her eyepiece so easily, but she wanted to keep going.
Rachel and I are both astronomers, so we're familiar with basic concepts of the universe. We can grasp galactic distances and locations. We understand how stars are formed, and we've directly confirmed approximately 345,000 planets in our galaxy, including 750 Earth-like planets residing in the habitable zones of their stars. Nisha opened her Google Universe app on her eyepiece and shared with Rachel.
Okay, Bok, control this app and show me where you came from. All human-known potentially habitable planets are in there.
Bok deftly manipulated Google Universe, despite being unfamiliar with the software. The view approached a small red star only 23 light-years away in the constellation of Scorpius. The galaxy is 100,000 light-years across. The label identified the star as Gliese 667C.
This is my home star, which is part of a three-star system. The other two stars are too far away to affect my home planet.
I approximate the pronunciation, my star, for you as Phoenix. As you can tell, it's much smaller and less bright than your star. I see that your application has our star identified as Gliese 667C, the third discovered star in our system.
Good. Maybe there's hope for you humans.
Nisha raised an eyebrow at Rachel.
They were transfixed as Bok traveled virtually within his solar system to the fourth planet in his star system and said, This blue fuzzy object is my planet, Oma. You've identified Oma as Gliese 667C, planet C. I assume the lowercase letter C designates it as the third planet you discovered in the system. I'm impressed. You already know about Oma. Rachel looked like a girl opening presents on her birthday.
Yes, I know that one, Nisha said.
Gliese 667CC was one of the first exoplanets we discovered, which had a possibility of having an Earth-like environment. It's still never been officially confirmed as suitable for intelligent life, but I always thought so. We were right, Rachel. Rachel smiled from ear to ear. I remember thinking its close distance might make Oma the first planet outside of our solar system we should explore once we master the technology. I guess we don't have to now. Two other planets are orbiting Gliese 667C in the habitable zone. There are planets F and C. They orbit further away, but they're still in the habitable zone. Why did you not move to one of those planets?
Bach understood the excitement in their voices, although he had only studied human emotional makeup for a few weeks.
I'm happy you were aware of the possibilities of my star system. The other two planets are too cold and dry for us because the oceans were too small. They're mostly like your planet Mars. Much of the Earth is too cold for us, but we found areas like here in the Mojave Desert, which are near an ocean with plenty of sunlight. My planet is near the warmest edge of the habitable zone, and we live on the coolest polar areas of Oma. Most of Oma is too hot for us.
Why did you want to leave your planet now? Rachel said.
About 2,000 years ago, we sent a probe to Earth for the same reason you're considering sending one to Oma. However, we had a more urgent purpose because conditions on Oma were deteriorating while Earth will be fine for about 300 million more years before it gets hotter. Our probe 2,000 years ago had an advanced version of the ion propulsion drive I now observe humans developing. We decided Earth would be a hospitable planet since we didn't find an advanced and intelligent society here. We found a few other candidates, but Earth was the closest compatible planet. The Earth of 2,000 years ago didn't have a technological society, so I guess you thought Earth would be a good place to go. Is this correct? Nisha said.
Yes.
We sent another probe 200 years ago, and we still regarded life on Earth as primitive. When we recently arrived on this planet, we realized human society had advanced slightly more quickly than we anticipated. However, the elders still don't perceive an advanced society on Earth, where its inhabitants are self-aware on a species level. That's why we decided to move our species here.
So you moved here knowing how the Earth is now? Nisha said.
Almost. Nisha and Rachel glanced at each other in disgust and said nothing. I wish to ask a question, Nisha, Bach said. His artificial voice sounded more natural to Nisha and Rachel. They didn't know if Bach had written software enhancements or they were getting used to his voice. Can I upload some data to your Google Universe app regarding my solar system? He said.
Bach, you can add whatever you want, Nisha said.
Please wait, Bach said. I'm converting my data to your format. Your systems are slow. Nisha and Rachel let out a simultaneous gasp as the fuzzy blue blob they knew as Gliese 667CC sharpened into a small and well-defined blue and white dot.
Can I zoom in now? Nisha said.
Yes, Bach said. You now have as much accessible geographic data about Oma as you do for your own Earth.
No way, Rachel said.
Way? Bach said. Nisha and Rachel glanced at each other with wide open eyes and smiled. Should we be more impressed with the fact he gave us this data on Oma or with the fact he said, way? Nisha said. They both giggled like children.
Please visit Oma. I'll guide you, Bach said. I can watch through your eyes.
Something about the last comment made Nisha anxious, but her excitement won out over caution. Nisha blinked to activate fly mode, and the view first showed Oma to be a single pale blue dot illuminated by the dull and softly red star, Phoenix. She traveled towards the dot.
This is better than any dream I've ever had, she said.
The dot expanded to 4 pixels, 16 and 256, and continued. I don't have to travel 23 light years to be here. Rachel stood next to Nisha and grabbed her arm, as though they were approaching the planet for real.
Keep going, Bach said, urging her on.
I will, Bach. I'm nervous about what I'll find. The little pale blue and white dot assumed the classic round form of a planet so familiar to Nisha and Rachel.
Oma looks a little like Earth, Nisha said to Rachel.
It looks similar, but where's the land? Nisha continued to fly towards Oma and noticed the same thing.
Yes, it's difficult to find land because of so many clouds. Wait, there's a landmass surrounded by the planetary ocean. Is there any other land?
Nisha, fly downward from your perspective, Rachel said. There's more land down there.
Gradually, Oma filled up the entire viewing area. Nisha squinted.
Bok, there's not much land on Oma. It's a water world.
There's slightly more dry land on Oma than on Earth. Oma is a much larger planet. It has over 3 times the mass of Earth. Those 2 landmasses are each as large as Eurasia on Earth. As a percentage, the surface of the planet, however, Earth is 70% ocean, and Oma is over 80% ocean. Rachel seemed confused.
The continents seem far apart. In relation to where your star is, each continent is near each pole. Is this right?
Yes, they're near each pole, though not centered directly over them.
Nisha, the weather patterns are much different than they are on Earth, Rachel said.
The poles and the land masses are mostly clear like on Earth, but storms are stretched out, circling the equator all the way to about 60 degrees latitude on each side of it.
Are these storms violent? Are they because of the slowing of the rotation due to tidal lock?
Yes, the storms are violent compared to Earth. It's because of the impending tidal lock.
As the rotation slows, the days become longer and hotter, and the nights are longer and colder. That's mitigated by the fact that except for near the land, the planet is covered in deep oceans. The average ocean depth on Oma is 20 kilometers or 70,000 feet, compared to 4.3 kilometers or 14,000 feet on Earth. Storms race unobstructed across the surface of Oma's ocean. Storm winds can reach the equivalent of 500 kilometers per hour or about 300 miles per hour. Storm patterns on Oma are like hurricanes, which can produce stronger local winds than what I mentioned. What you on Earth call the Coriolis effect is weak on Oma because of the slow rotation of the planet, so storms can spin in either direction anywhere on the planet. Often the storms have no spin.
The weather is too violent for you now, Nisha said.
Yes, the weather is growing increasingly violent. The energy requirements to modify the winds and rotation are becoming too high. That's why we decided to move away from Oma and find a more hospitable planet. We estimate Earth will remain hospitable for about 300 million years. After that, the luminosity of the sun will noticeably increase. That will gradually make the Earth too hot for advanced life forms to exist. The Earth seemed like the perfect choice for us to live for a long time to come. If we survive 300 million years, we can block the sun at a Lagrangian point when it gets too hot. That will keep Earth cooler than it would be naturally.
Nisha flew her virtual spacecraft within about 20 miles of the surface of Oma and dodged the storms she encountered.
This is so realistic. I'm immersed in your world. The ocean in places has been whipped up into white foam from the winds. I'm wondering, before the Omanji developed their advanced technology, how did they cross this enormous and violent ocean? The winds are mostly east to west, not north to south. We had difficulty navigating wind-driven vessels in the open ocean. Few vessels reached the equatorial islands where we discovered the Utes. Only after we developed air flight were we able to cross the ocean all the way to the southern continent where the Utes had independently evolved.
Okay, hold on for a second, Nisha interrupted. Are you telling me another intelligent species evolved on Oma? You mentioned the Utes before.
They're semi-intelligent and friendly, so we took them as pets when we found them on the equatorial islands during our age of discovery. I've studied human history. Earth is a better place for technologically challenged early explorers than Oma. The wind and ocean currents allowed them to travel all around Earth in wind-driven vessels. On Earth, you have predictable trade winds and currents, which allow vessels to travel in all directions between continents. On Oma, no reliable north-south ocean currents or winds exist. Most winds are east-west and can destroy any wind-driven vessel. We couldn't sail from the northern continent into an ocean that's 3 times the surface area of all the Earth's oceans combined and expect to arrive at any destination. When we discovered the Utes, we only suspected another continent existed. The equatorial islands were too small for the Utes to have evolved there. I'll explain that later.
Nisha and Rachel loved learning this information. They heard the crunching sound of boots on the coarse granite desert sand.
We must go, Bok. People are coming, Nisha said. Can we continue this tour tomorrow?
Yes, that's fine, Bok said.
I must go too.
My parents are summoning me. They signed off.
Rachel, here they come. We'll talk about this later.
I recorded the whole thing, Nisha whispered. General Sherman, come on in, Nisha said, still in shock over what she had learned.
Rachel, please call me Lucas. I'm here to let you two know the meeting scheduled for 6 o'clock hours tomorrow is still on. In the meantime, I need your help. Our expedition into the colony today was unsuccessful.
While it's interesting to visit the colony and interact with the aliens, I mean the Omanji, we learned little. At tomorrow's meeting, I would like your recommendations about how to proceed from here.
Okay, Lucas, we'll do some brainstorming tonight and we'll be at the meeting at 6 o'clock in the tent.
Thank you, the general said. He smiled and left quickly.
Nisha and Rachel let out a deep breath of air, as though they had been holding their breath for the time the general had been in their tent. For about a minute, they stood in silence.
I don't know what to say or think right now, Rachel said.
I don't either, Nisha said, as she continued to watch the colony filtering the light of a blazing sunset as they walked to the mess tent. I like to think of myself as a forward-looking and open-minded person, but the future scares me. I want things to be as they once were, but this is reality, and it's exciting. I can't believe what we just saw. I always wanted to visit an alien world. I guess the cliche is right. Be careful what you ask for.
What do we advise the general to do in tomorrow's meeting? Rachel asked as she loaded her mess tray with all the vegetarian items she could find. They took their food out to a picnic table with a view of the colony.
I don't know. On one hand, the world should understand reality. On the other, I don't want the general to know what we know. I think the government would screw things up just when we're making such substantial progress in establishing what may be a real personal relationship with Bok. From the looks of it, Bok may be our only hope. Soon, about 81 billion hypersmart and arrogant Omanji will live here. They think the Earth is theirs for the taking. Not only will humans be a small minority group, we'll be a marginalized one as well. And that's if we're lucky and they don't become abusive toward us.
Speaking of being a minority group, I'm getting a notification that over 100 new large spheres entered Earth's orbit in the past day, Rachel said. Over 400 of them are in orbit now. Once they move into this colony, humans will be a minority group in the United States. That's only 0.5% of their population.
Yeah, that's right, Nisha said. The colony has expanded east along the mountains right across Highway 14 and into the open desert. They built a highway overcrossing. Now the highway is in a tunnel. So far, they're avoiding towns, but people will need to move out of the way. It's strange how they're so considerate, yet they treat us like animals.
Well, we humans are considerate when we preserve bear habitat, but if a bear wanders into a neighborhood and becomes dangerous, we may shoot it, Nisha said. It makes no difference whether we built the neighborhood on the bear's territory or not. Humans are considerate and inconsiderate at the same time.
Yeah, it's easier to spot inconsistent logic in others than in us, Rachel said.
So what will we advise the general to do tomorrow?
Well, Nisha said, we can't tell him what we know and how we know it. However, we can make conjectures, which later turn out to be true, if you know what I mean.
Yeah, you're right. We can speculate that the Omanji may be here to stay and point to the ever-expanding colony as evidence to support the theory. In hindsight, it's obvious that vast numbers of them are moving here, and not for a 2-week vacation. There's something about knowing an absolute fact that changes things, you know?
Absolutely, Rachel said. She peered out at the darkening skies behind the colony. The colony itself had a faint glow at night. Although its skyline was already many times larger than the top 10 biggest city skylines in the world put together, the glow wasn't as bright as they expected. However, the colony appeared beautiful to the eye.
We need to figure out a way to tell the general that the Omanji know everything we do and say in the colony, Nisha said. We also need to tell him the Omanji are monitoring all electronic conversations. Nothing is secure. Their databases must be immense. They must grow at the rate of petabytes per hour or more.
Rachel gazed at the colony. I think we should let the general figure things out independently. We can't let him know they regard us as only another animal on Earth.
Yes, Nisha said. We need to limit our input to speculation.
They walked into the tent and fell asleep quickly, knowing the meeting would be early.